Are we ready, Sheena? Okay. Go ahead and call the meeting to order. Roll call. Joni?
Here.
Jim?
Here.
Joe is not here. Heather?
Here.
Marlene?
Here.
Cindy?
Here.
And myself, Jared, is here. Approval of the agenda. Do I have approval of the January 29, 2026 hospital board agenda?
I move to approve.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Approval of the December 4th, 2025 hospital board minutes.
I'll move to approve the minutes from December 4th, 2025.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Visitors' comments?
None submitted.
Board member comments? Go ahead, Marlene.
Want to thank the assembly. We had a great.
Push the mic down. There you go. Would you like to repeat that?
There you go.
I want to thank the assembly for the excellent work session we had with them on Monday night.
Thank you. Any other comments? Committee reports. Resource?
The Resource Committee met on the 26th, and clinic and lab visits are down slightly, which is not abnormal for this time of year. Long-term care is back at capacity, and there have been changes in home health with numbers of patients declining. Consequently, the year-to-date revenue for home health at the end of December looked a bit light. In terms of expenses, old building repairs and maintenance are above budget, which is not too much of a surprise given previous assessments of the challenges of keeping the facility in good operating order. Utilities were up due both to the work building now being occupied and to the challenging weather we've had this winter. We don't yet have the revenue we anticipated from the work building, and Phil and Jason, I'm sure, will cover that in more detail. We're currently waiting on an interim rate review and anticipate the results will bring a strong receivable that gets us back on budget. The scope clinics also have not yet happened, and we are down one position, so these have also influenced the amount of revenue generated to date. And the PMC business office resourcing is working well, however, and our investments continue to perform well. The balance sheet looks good, and days cash on hand are currently over 123. And I went back through old cash on hand notes and was trying to make some comparisons, but as I had a conversation with Phil before the meeting started, that can vary wildly. But we are in good standing right now.
Any questions on that report? Thank you, Cindy. Long-term care quality?
Long-term care quality met this month. Same issue of the struggle to keep the facility warm enough during the cold snap that occurred in December. One radiator did fail, but the patients were able to be kept warm. Long-term care is full. There's been some turnover in the last couple months. Discussion of when there is turnover to take advantage of that time to inspect the rooms and see if there's anything substantial that needs to be upgraded before somebody else moves into them. They looked at the problem list and progress made on many items that could be removed from it, and others are ongoing. Still working on getting the new falls detection systems up and running.
Questions on that report? Thank you, Marlene. Critical access hospital quality?
So the critical access hospital quality committee met January 21st. They reviewed the quality of program shares by department heads. One change to note, home health has been combined with the critical access hospital quality improvement committee to better share improvement and resources. As the emergency preparedness committee completed their annual reviews for all locations, home health has now been included with the new HVA down on the main campus. Action items were reviewed by the committee. One item, the sewer line, was closed out. It's a plan to continue preventative maintenance as opposed to any large-scale repairs because they're not viable. The committee continues to monitor access to care, noting that specialty clinics such as endocrinology, dermatology, audiology, et cetera, increase clinic visits in those months when offered. And looking forward to the Scopes Clinic occurring February 5th through 6th. It's going on the schedule. The clinic is experiencing an uptick in no-shows and is working to address this by updating reminders and via phone calls and text messages and looking at other tools. The two occupational therapists recently hired by rehab staff are on board, which is helping decrease the length of wait for physical therapy care, and interviews are happening for the two vacant physical therapist positions. So hopefully a couple months and the wait list will go down and workload will ease. And then just a few topics that kind of randomly stood out, but the new morgue fully in use, some small updates still needed to be made in the room with plans to have the police department and state trooper tour the new facility. Shipping is causing issues at times when it comes to shipping time and temperature sensitive materials. It can become problematic. And it's cool the lab was able to offer alternative shipping method possibilities as the clinic works to find other avenues to get materials here timely manner that can be usable. And then radiology, lastly, has shifted to digital image sharing with other facilities. And it's just impressive. Outside of the major hospitals in Seattle and Anchorage, PMC has sent images to over 53 hospitals in the past year. So thank you.
Any questions for Joni? Thank you for that report. Kinderskog Youth Programs?
Yes, the Kinderskog and a group of hospital staff and advisory representatives gathered to share ideas for the Kinderskog and youth programs and to develop goals for the year ahead. And from that conversation, we focused on six areas of concentration: community connection and camp culture, reach and awareness, education and empowerment, advocacy and sustainability, training and professional development, and environment and facilities. And within each of these, we came up with 3 to 6 items to focus on and the metrics to be able to advance the goals and measure the progress that we made in achieving them. And it's an ambitious outline, but we feel it's achievable and will serve the program well. And some of the goals from the program include establishing a credit for service in the PMC youth programs for program interns. There are various opportunities for cultural enrichment, working on environmental education integration in the programs that are offered, and offering childcare on school in-service days. And we're looking at opportunities for more sustainable funding, and we talked about the possibility of starting an endowment that was focused on Kinderskog and youth programs. I would like to note that Katie was recently recognized by the American Camps Association with their Golden Lens Photography Award, and this is focused on depicting camp experience and best practices. And unfortunately, she won't be able to attend the award ceremony at the February conference in San Diego due to Kinderskog responsibilities, but I wanted to publicly acknowledge that recognition. And Katie has put everything together in an outline document that's very concise and good, and she would be willing to share that with anybody who's interested.
Any questions on that report? Thank you, Cindy. Moving on to home health, were there any questions regarding the home health report submitted by Ruby?
No questions, but hang in there. It's an important program, and there are a number of folks that are looking for ways to help assist and make that, advertise that.
I was really excited to see who was hired.
Thank you, Ruby, for that report. Human resources, did we have any questions regarding that report?
I had one question, and this might already be done, but in the percentage assigned to terminations over the course of the year, is that broken out by departments, and does that have utility? I imagine so.
It can be. I did not break it out by department. I just gave you a full total. It's just the whole facility as a whole. So it's only people we've hired. It did not include travelers. So the percentage is the amount of when you take the percentage. And actually, Paylocity, our system, gives us the percentage, so it's pretty easy to come up with.
It's only if there's utility in seeing by department where the turnover is.
I can run that, and I can make sure it's in the next report.
Cool.
I'm sorry?
Only if it's useful.
Oh. We do look at it. Phil likes to look at it. He can actually look at it himself because he's a super user on the Paylocity system. So he can always check and see, like, which department is having a large turnover, or, you know, is there a pattern or something of that nature.
Yeah.
And Cindy, I noticed that we're up to 22 apartments. Are those rented year-round?
Not all of them. We did rent one, so that was just for the time period, say October through April, I think, to cover us through the holidays and stuff. So every once in a while, somebody who owns a bed and breakfast may contact us and say, hey, would you like to rent? And we did take them up on it just because we needed the place. But generally, we try to, if we have a lease, we try to do a year-long lease. We try to include utilities and internet if we can, so that it's just all together. And it goes pretty well as far as the rentals go. We have very nice landlords as far as the people who own the rentals here. Some are through the realtor and some are direct with us.
Thank you. Any other questions for Cindy? Thank you for that report, Cindy. New facility.
Good afternoon. Justin Wetzel with Arcadis. Regarding the site work for the new hospital facilities lot, we are working on a final revision, hopefully, for the SWIP plan. That's going to be submitted probably at the end of this week. And hopefully that satisfies the last few remaining questions we had from ADEC regarding the new future hospital site, which is where a lot of the questions came from. In regards to the actual work building itself, we did have some activity in the building, kind of a remob for the contractor and for Capital Office. And we were able to get the last bit of long lead FF&E items that were taking a while to get a hold of. Some for public health nurse area, and then some few items for the remainder of the building. We also are working on the upgrades to the electrical system regarding the servers and the vaccine fridges and the magnet. And the magnet batteries and cabinets did arrive and were put into the electrical room and were basically prepped and ready for final installation on that. And we're waiting for the Eaton representative for the power conditioner and to basically be on site at the same time so we can activate the system with the new UPS cabinet. The monument sign was installed and we'll probably have most of everything that we targeted for that MOB wrapped up by the end of this week. Regarding the new hospital design, Bettesworth did come out to site and we did a really good walkthrough. Dawson was part of that and we kind of walked the site and looked at the concept layout. And but essentially, you know, the next phase, the next steps for that design is to, to keep trying to advance the design, essentially. Now that the work building is complete, we have a layout concept for phase three and phase four, kind of the whole campus build out. But the next step for that would be to hopefully get some additional funding for moving that concept forward into a more advanced design as things develop. So, any questions on any of that?
Don't see any. Thank you, Justin, for that report.
Thank you.
Quality. Any questions on Stephanie's report? Thank you, Stephanie, for that report. Infection control. Any questions on Rachel's report? Thank you, Rachel. Executive summary.
Thank you. Any questions on my report? I'll give a couple of bullets since a few things have been updated since the submission. Main things for this report. Thank you again for the work session, and again, those are delivered by or written in the charter, so we're required to do those. But it was just a really nice. I want to thank everyone that presented during that session, and also the engagement, especially with the Rural Healthcare Transformation Funds and getting the update. So I know Katie's on now, so that was excellent. So hard to sit in after 5 o'clock for a couple of hours in the evening. So that was really, really great. And it's good to go over the past year and where we are. Some follow-up items from that work session. I just don't want to lose out on that. We don't necessarily have to make any discussion or motions at this point. What was the housing initiative that was brought up? We didn't really have enough time to have that presented and discussed, but I just want to put a kind of an asterisk on that to see if we can follow up with the borough. It might be something the board can maybe through one of our committees, we can have a follow-up conversation with the assembly on. So I had the opportunity to participate with the Talk of Alaska this week. Felt very honored to be part of that group. It was Commissioner Hedberg, Dr. Zink, and myself. And we were on live for an hour, which felt like 10 hours. And as I mentioned on the radio today, it was pretty stressful, but I thought it was a pretty productive and good information and good conversation. That's still an evolving situation with the Rural Healthcare Transformation Fund. So we'll update the board monthly on this. We'll definitely make a placeholder on that. You know, the information that was presented on Monday by Katie, really no new information at this point, but we are waiting for the portal to open. We have our projects listed. We have our letter of intents that Katie and I discuss related to those projects. You know, the thing to remember is that it sounds wonderful and, you know, there's a big chunk of money that could potentially be garnished or, you know, brought into transformation. However, you know, we have to spend that money. We have to make sure it's appropriately and responsibly utilized in that year when we're utilizing these projects too. So being very judicious and careful with that. Other things, the other thing I really want to make sure I pass along is the MRI. We have the hearing coming up next week on February 4th. It's 2 hours, 11:30 to 1:30. That should be the final aspect of from the state regulatory process for certificate of need. And we've been collecting letters of support throughout this month. With the link is on our website. Letters of support can be read at the hearing as well. So that's the way you can do the hearing. It doesn't have to be another statement. And so we are, our point person for that has been Julie Walker from Public Relations, and that information is on the website.
Out of curiosity, with the survey, have you been getting a fair amount of feedback?
Yes, I believe we have been. We have a few people that are going to testify, and we're also there's been a significant number of letters submitted, including Representative Himshut has submitted a letter, and a number of other stakeholders. So, yeah.
I just wanted to add to that, if anybody was interested in submitting a letter, it doesn't have to be incredibly detailed, and you don't have to know all the mechanics of how an MRI operates.
just, and it's very easy to respond on the site.
Right. Yeah, and,
Is there a place people should go, the LAIO office or up at the work building?
It's a Zoom. It's hosted by the state, and it's just a Zoom link. It's very straightforward. It's not a common location. It's not assembly chambers. It's just a Zoom link with open hearing. Yeah. Oh, it's in the report. Yeah, the link is in the report. It's also on the website, so it should be pretty readily available. I'm getting some text messages from Katie, so I'm just, she's responding. She said a really impressive response from the community. There have been over 90 responses to the CON submitted, so she's very nice. Thank you, Katie. As far as the funding for the work building, you know, we do have a tenant in there, State of Alaska, so that's very helpful. I believe the comment related to that is really around the MRI and getting that online and providing that service. So and having that CON done as well. So very, very excited to get to that next step. I think that's all I had. Any questions?
Thank you, Phil. Financials, Jason. You're still muted, Jason.
Sorry about that. I was halfway through my presentation.
Oh, well, thank you.
So it was going quick. Sorry about that.
No problem.
I should have done a mic check. So I just was saying that I'm going to go through the income statement fairly quick. I'm going to look at the year-to-date number since, you know, we haven't presented the November and the December, and I wanted to keep as much time for our auditors to give the year-end financial statement. So I apologize for being nervous and missing that mute button. So, okay, here we go. Total gross patient revenues, you can see is $16.8 million. It's compared to a budget of $16.4 million, so we're about $370,000 above budget, and we're 6% above last year. So inpatient's down a little bit, outpatient a little bit as well. Long-term care has been very busy through most of these months and is back up again. So deductions running a little higher because revenues are a little higher. Cindy had commented that we have to do a mid-year correction as we get the interim rate review done. We have additional expense because of the work building, and that will probably reduce our contractual adjustments and release a little bit more to the bottom line and help us get caught up. Here we're showing that we're off budget by about $378,000 on net patient revenues. 340B is outperforming budget, and of course the prior year, we didn't have much at this time in the prior year. PERS in-kind is above budget because of the work building. Grants are coming in as expected. Other revenue is coming in as strong as well. Expenses, I'll just give a recap. So we're running high in expenses due to the higher patient volumes, things of that nature. Employee benefits are a little high, and utilities are a little high. Wages are close. Contract labor, but we're about $743,000 above our budget. So we'll need to do probably a budget amendment when we propose the budget here in May. Investments are doing well compared to our budget and also compared to last year. So that's fairly strong. Still seeing some grant revenues come through at the completion of the building. So the bottom line here is $4,109,000 year to date. As compared to a budget of 15, and as compared last year, we had, you know, a little stronger work going on in the building, and so that was 6.7 million. So we look at our our cash balance. There's $2 million in an operating account, and there's $2 million in our short-term investments. And there is, let's see here, there's $4.7 million in our long-term investments. So our days cash on hand is sitting at about 122 days. That would help us to address any kind of a sudden shock to our cash flow. Happens on occasion over the industry, over the years, I've seen it. You know, insurance companies get attacked and they can't process payments, things of that nature. So it's important to have basically 4 months of revenues on hand to keep the organization going in the event of cash flow issues. So everything else is looking good. Cindy did a great job at explaining the various things that are going on. Of course, we're going to wrap up the budget tonight with a report here shortly. Cost report was submitted here in about a month. This coming month, we'll get started with the budget for this coming year. So all projects are on schedule. Let me go ahead and introduce Sean Johnson with DZA. He and his team prepared the financial statements.
All right. Thank you, Jason, for an introduction. Thank you, everybody, for having me. I'm just going to share screen really quick. All right. So I'm going to be presenting to you your audited financial statements for the most recent fiscal year end, June 30, 2025. The financial statements are actually separated into two different reports. We had to do the financial statement report separate from the compliance reports this year just due to a delay in the federal government approving the compliance supplement. So there's actually, it's under two separate covers, but I'll go over both of them very briefly. If anybody has any questions throughout the presentation, please feel free to ask at any time. I'm going to go to the audit report, which is on the first, on page one. This is where we give you our opinion on your financial statements. Our opinion is what we call an unmodified opinion. Means the financial statements are fairly stated in all material respects, or it's a clean opinion. This report does talk about the financial statements being the responsibility of your management team. And then our responsibility as your auditors is to audit the financial statements and provide that opinion on them. So clean report there. Go to the financial statements. Like I mentioned, this was for the last fiscal year. So the first statement is a statement of net position, or informally the balance sheet. June 30, 25 compared to June 30, 24. I'm not going to go over this. You all have already seen these financial statements. And I will say that there were not any significant audit adjustments to these financial statements. There were some adjustments. The most significant one was related to how your participation in the Alaska PERS for both pension and other post-employment benefits had flowed through your financial statements. That adjustment was made based on assistance from us during the audit process, but that was really the only significant change that was made from the financial statements that you all had already seen. So I'm going to skip that. I'm going to go ahead and skip through the statement of net position. I will cover the statement of revenues, expenses, and changes in net position, very high level, mostly just to show on your net patient service revenue. So this is the net after contractual adjustments. Did have a pretty sizable increase from 24 to 25. And that drove the overall increase in your operating revenues about 19%. So that's a pretty good increase from 24 to 25. On the expense side, you can see that the biggest drivers of expense changes were, one was employee benefits. Now that is almost all related to the impact of the Alaska PERS on your employee benefits. In 25, it was about a $1.6 million increase to expenses. And in 24, it was about a $1.7 million decrease to expenses. So that's why the employee benefits look so different from year to year. And that's just has to do with how the overall pension system performs compared, you know, how their investments are performing compared to their expectations, and then also the actuarial experience for benefits. Overall, your expenses increased 31% from 24 to 25, resulting in an operating loss of about $159,000 compared to that operating income of $2.2 million. From non-operating, really the only thing item of note here is you can see the CARES Act Employee Retention Credit. You all applied for that credit. So the revenue was recorded when you made that application and you determined that you qualified for the credit. The cash had not yet been received as of the end of your fiscal year, June 30, 25, but because you made that application during the year, it was recorded as revenue in anticipation of it being received. Capital grants towards the bottom, about $13.3 million. Most of that was related to the grants for the work building. And then so overall, your change in net position is about $15.5 million. I think the most significant amount just for managing and governing the organization really is your operating income, not necessarily the change in net position because it's so heavily impacted by those capital grants. Statement of cash flows, just very briefly, from operating activities, you generated a positive $2.6 million of cash compared to $684,000 in the previous year, so a good improvement there. From non-capital financing activities, you can see most of the activity there is the capital grants coming in and then using that to pay for mostly the work building and other capital assets, and then payments being made on your leases and subscription liabilities. From investing activities, you can see that you had some investment income and then some reinvestment of that income back into investments. So overall, your change in cash was a positive almost $2.3 million from 24 to 25. Moving on to the notes, I'm not going to go over the notes in your financial statements, but I always just like to point out that they're here to give context to the readers of your financial statements. And just to provide additional information. So the first page talks about who you are. You are a component unit of the Petersburg Borough. You also have a foundation, which is included in these financial statements. Then we go through a couple pages of accounting policies. This just tells the reader how you account for transactions, either by election or by requirement that you're accounting for transactions in accordance with accounting standards. And then we've got a lot of detailed schedules in your financial statements that I am not going to go over in the interest of time. I do want to point out very briefly on page 18, you can see on the net patient service revenue, we do separate that out by payer. And so you can see the biggest driver of your increase was actually the Medicare program for the fiscal year. All right, I'm going to move to page 41 on these statements. We have a second audit report. This report is related to our audit of your internal controls. Because you're a governmental entity, you are required to have your auditors look at your internal controls and then also report any weaknesses that we would classify as either a material weakness or a significant deficiency. And this report is also a clean report. We have no findings to report here. I'll pause real quick as if anybody has any questions while I move over to the next piece.
Don't see any.
Okay. I'm going to go over the financial indicators next. So the financial indicators is where we have taken your financial information and compared to the previous fiscal years, and we've also compared to some peer hospitals. For the peers, we've looked at all hospitals in the state, all critical access hospitals in the western U.S., all hospitals less than 50 beds, all rurals, less than 90 million, and then all either rural or urban in that 25 to 55 million range. And keep in mind that the peer information is a couple years old, so it's not directly comparable to 2025. This first graph is your total margin. So this is the total change in net position divided by total revenues. And like I mentioned before, this includes the capital grants. So this one's not as useful, but just the reason why all your numbers from 24 and 25 are so high is because of the influence of the capital grant. So I'm just going to move to the next one, which is operating margin. And this is showing you your overall operating income or loss divided by your operating revenues. For your three fiscal years that we have here, we did calculate the overall, and then we did a separate calculation where we backed out the impact of your participation in the PERS pension and post-employment benefits. And so if you look at the second bar, the fourth bar, and the sixth bar, that I think shows a very good trend of where you were in 2023 and how you've improved your situation into 2024 and how you've improved it even more into 2025. Now, the participation in the PERS is not really anything that you have any direct control of it from year to year. So that's why we backed it out, just to show what your operating margin looked like over those 3 years without that. And you can see that very positive trend from 23 through 25. So I think that's just a good thing to point out. Your days cash on hand. So this was the June 30, 2025 number. You were at 113. We do include the investments that are limited by the board in this calculation. So just for clarification, we like to see this at about 100 days cash on hand or higher. Jason just mentioned 4 months. So a little bit more conservative than what we typically recommend, but I definitely support that too. And you can see you see the trend here as well that your cash has grown from 80 up to 113 from 23 to 25. Current ratio is your current assets divided by current liabilities. So this is this is showing you how well can you pay off current liabilities or current obligations, things that are due in the next year, with available current resources. So either cash, collectible accounts receivable. We like to see this in about the 2 to 3 range. And one of the things to point out is the investments that are limited by the board, we don't include that in current assets because you all as the board have placed a limitation on that. So if that were to have been included, then this number would be higher than it is. But 2 is still a good number, and you can see that has improved as well from 23 to 25. Next one is your capital equipment expenditures. This is showing you how well are you keeping up with depreciation on your equipment. A value of 100% means you replaced equipment at the same rate it depreciated. You can see in the last 3 years, you've been below 100%. However, with the work building coming into service in 26, your fiscal year 26, I do anticipate this to jump pretty high, probably into the multi-hundreds for 26. And that is typical of what we see is you don't have the same equipment replacement need in any given year. So we like to look at more longer term periods of time on this graph. And you know, with what's anticipated in 26, that'll average this out to well over 100%. Your long-term debt to net position, you really don't have much long-term debt. You only have leases and subscription liabilities. So leases on some few pieces of equipment. Subscription is your Cerner or your accounting and electronic health record system. I mean, you can see how that's actually decreased quite a bit from 23 to 25 as those obligations are being satisfied. Days in net patient accounts receivable shows you how long on average it takes you to collect on your collectible accounts receivable. You've been very, very stable here in the mid-60s, a little bit lower than the peer hospitals. We like to see this, you know, in the low 60s range. So I think you're a pretty healthy number on this one as well. This is just the gross calculation. If you were to take out the allowance for uncollectible accounts, what it looks like, and it's also pretty consistent. Contractual adjustments just shows you from all of your gross revenue, how much are you writing off because you have a contract with Medicare or Medicaid or commercial insurance companies. And you can see this one has actually gone down a little bit. Keep in mind that Medicare pays you at least the critical access hospital services based on your cost. So this one can jump around a little bit depending on what your cost structure looks like. Bad debt is the next one, just showing on average how much you've written off in bad debt. It was negative back in 23 because you had some recoveries of bad debt. But being at about the 1 to 2% is pretty typical what we see. It looks like it's a little bit lower than the peer hospitals, which is a good thing. It means you're doing a good job collecting from your patients who are not commercially insured or if they have higher deductibles, you're not writing a lot of that off to bad debt. This one is a little bit slightly different calculation, but also includes your charity care. And charity care in critical access hospitals, I typically see at about 0.5%. So really, you're not out of the ordinary on that either. Just kind of noting your full-time equivalent employees, you went from 136 to 141 during the fiscal year. We do then divide your revenue by full-time equivalent employees, kind of an indirect measure of productivity. Keep in mind that does not include contract labor, so that could influence this as well. But yeah, you went from 161 to 187 on average. And then the salaries and benefits per full-time equivalent employee is showing you your all-in cost. The second column and the fourth column do exclude that impact of the pension plan and the other post-employment benefits plan. And so you can see you went from 113,000 on average to 122,000 on average for your all-in cost, including benefits for your employees. All right.
Hey, can I ask a question?
Yes, yes, please.
So this is actually backing up. And Phil, you might want to explain this to me, but just the capital equipment expenditures to the annual equipment, so looking at depreciation, what is this used for? I'm assuming it, well, I'll not say what I think. What does it mean?
I mean,
what we usually use this for is an indication of, will you have capital needs higher than average going forward?
So you don't want to have to replace everything all at once. You need to stagger it out over time. So this is a metric to help you figure that out or watch that?
Yes. So if you see multi-years in a row that's below 100%, it's an indication that you're probably going to have a year where you're going to have to replace more than you have in the last couple of years.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, very briefly, this is the second of our reports. This one is specific to your compliance with federal grants. So this is the one that typically is included in the financial statement packet, but we did have to separate it out this year. So we do have an independent auditor's report on your schedule of expenditures of federal awards. It also is a clean opinion, meaning that the schedule is fairly stated. So other than that, it's pretty similar to the other report. This is the schedule. I'll blow this up a little bit. So this shows you the various federal grants that you have expended during the year, not necessarily received, but expended. You can see that the largest one is the Coronavirus Capital Projects Fund that was being spent on the work building. So about 12.5 million out of the 13.5 million in total. That is the grant that we audited. You are required to have your auditors audit your compliance of that grant. Our conclusion was that you did comply in all material respects with the various compliance requirements. We did have one very minor item of note when we audited that, in that we are recommending some better documentation of your, when you check vendors for being debarred, where they're debarred from doing business with the federal government, you are required to make sure that the vendors you use are not on the excluded parties list. And so our only recommendation was just to better document your checking of those vendors. But there was no vendors that were debarred, and we did testing of that too and hadn't found nothing. So just a very minor item of note. But other than that, you did comply with the requirements of that grant. So that is all for that report. The last, there's three letters. One of them actually kind of just went over. This one is our auditor communication letter. This is the letter that we are required to issue at the end of every audit that just gives you information about the audit. So we'll just go through this very quickly. You did actually have some new accounting standards that were required to be implemented in 25. The difference between what was presented in 25 versus previous years is that now sick leave benefits are now recorded as a liability or an obligation on your financial statements, whereas before they were not. Sick leave is not a vested benefit, which is why under the prior standards they were not recorded. But the Government Accounting Standards Board now requires it to be recorded based on the amount of sick leave benefits that you anticipate to be used by your employees into the future. So that was estimated. It was about a $277,000 addition to liabilities on your financial statements. We also went back and restated 24 to be in compliance with these standards as well, which is what's required to be done. You do have estimates in your financial statements. The most significant of those are the allowance on your accounts receivable for uncollectible accounts or contractual adjustments. That's an estimated amount of what you would expect not to collect, so that the net patient accounts receivable is what you expect to collect. Your third-party payer settlements, which is your Medicare settlements, are also an estimate because they do get audited by the max, and the actual settlement could be different than what's been estimated. And then all of the accounts and balances related to your participation with the Alaska PERS, that's also an estimate. It's based on estimated actuarial information, estimated performance on investments. So there's a lot of estimates in there. On the next page, it talks about, you know, if we had any difficulties in the audit. We did not. We also did not have any material audit adjustments, like I mentioned before, which, in my opinion, that's the most important paragraph on this letter. That means that those financial statements that you all are getting on a month on a monthly basis are accurate. And we have not come in as your auditors at the end of the year and made a bunch of changes to those. So very, very good news there. We did not have any disagreements with management during the audit. Weren't aware of management reaching out to any other CPA firms on any issues. The kind of last paragraph talks about, there's a lot of required supplementary information, a lot of it having to do with there's a lot of pages of the pension plan. That required supplementary information is not actually audited. The notes are audited, the financial statements are audited, but those supplemental schedules are not, with the exception of the schedule of expenditures of federal awards, which is audited. The last section here talks about our risk assessment process. So we are required to assess risks of the areas that potentially could be incorrect in your financial statements or controls that weren't being followed, essentially. And so what these are is the risks that we assessed, and what we did with those is we then developed audit procedures to make sure that everything is going okay. So these are the highest risk areas, and so the areas that we hit the hardest during the audit. So management override of controls, we assess that as a risk in every audit we do. So this is not unique to you. And it's just because internal controls rely on people to perform duties, and people can override those duties. And so we assess that in every audit. The next two have to do with the nature of them being accounting estimates. So the accounts receivable and your third party settlements. Anytime you have estimates, there's always the potential that management could be biased in making those estimates to skew the financial results. So we always look at estimates very heavily. And so we had no issues with any of the estimates. The employee retention credit, what we consider that a significant and unusual transaction, because it's not something that you are able to apply for or get in, you know, every day. And so we made sure that the application was made correctly, that it was calculated correctly and such, and no issues with that. And then the implementation of the new accounting standard for the sick leave. Anytime you have a new accounting standard, there's always the risk that management either didn't implement it or implemented it incorrectly. And so we also had no issue with that. The last piece I'm going to go over is we had two advisory letters. This one I already mentioned, just compliance with the debarment requirements. And the other one is that we did note that there are some policies and procedure documents that could be or that should be implemented. The first is, because you do get a lot of federal grants, the federal government requires that you have written policies and procedures over grants management, making sure that the expenditures that you are using to cover those grants are following the rules and regulations related to the grants. And some additional things. I know Jason and his team has been working on this, but it wasn't in place at the end of the fiscal year, which is why we listed it as an advisory comment. And then there were some additional policies and procedures for some of the significant transaction cycles. For example, the review of manual journal entries, the estimates for the accounts receivable and the third-party payer settlements, and then also how the schedule of expenditures of federal awards is prepared. So just making sure that going forward, you have written policies or procedures over how all those transactions are recorded and then the review process. That concludes the presentation. So if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to stick around for a few minutes.
Any questions? I don't see any. Sean, thank you for that.
My pleasure.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, everybody.
And Jason, did you have anything else?
No, I didn't have anything else. I just wanted to point out it was kind of covered by the auditors there. But if you look at the net income for the year 2025, if you really want to know what it was, you have to add back in that $1.7 million for the OPEB. So it looks light for the year, but that transaction, which is not a cash transaction, is what caused it to look like. The real performance to look at is the fact that 3 years ago, we had a negative operating margin. last year we had a 2%, and well 2 years ago we had a 2%, and then last year a 5%. We've been rebounding post-COVID. That's all I wanted to comment on. We'll get those policies and procedures in place here shortly.
Thank you. Thank you, Jason, for your report. Moving on, there's no old business, new business. Petersburg Medical Center, Petersburg, Alaska, Resolution 2026-01, a resolution affirming continued support for the phased development of a new hospital facility in Petersburg, including the Certificate of Need process. And I will read this document. Board Resolution 2026-01, a resolution affirming the continued support for the phased development of a new hospital facility in Petersburg, including the Certificate of Need process. Whereas the Petersburg Medical Center Board of Directors and the Petersburg Borough Assembly recognize the ongoing importance of ensuring reliable access to high quality, safe, and sustainable health care services for Petersburg Borough residents and visitors. Whereas in 2021, PMC adopted Resolution 2021-01, a copy of which is attached hereto as Exhibit A, expressing its support for the initial planning for new healthcare facilities to be developed in phases. Whereas since adoption of the 2021 resolution, PMC acknowledges that the project is actively underway and continues to progress consistent with the phased approach previously supported by the Assembly. Whereas PMC has continued to advance the project through a public engagement and planning activities, including preparation and submission of a Certificate of Need application to the Alaska Department of Health. Whereas the Assembly has passed a resolution continuing to support PMC as it proceeds with subsequent phases of project development. And whereas PMC recognizes that the project remains subject to applicable state and federal regulatory approvals, including the CON process and the PMC's ongoing participation and compliance with those requirements. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the PMC Board thanks the Assembly for its resolution affirming continued support for PMC's planning for the project, reaffirms that the project is intended to preserve and strengthen access to essential health care services for the Petersburg Borough residents and visitors, acknowledges and supports the submission of the CON application for the Wellness Education Resource Centers, Hospital Administrative Support, and Outpatient Services Building, and MRI suite portions of the project as a significant planning milestone, reaffirms its commitment to ongoing compliance with and participation in the State of Alaska's CON process related to the project, authorizes PMC management to take such administrative and procedural actions as may be necessary to support regulatory review of the project, and affirms its intent to continue coordinating with the Assembly and to keep the Assembly informed regarding material developments related to the project. Do I have a motion for that?
I move that we affirm Board Resolution 2026-01.
A motion, a second. Do you need roll call or is it a hand vote? Okay. Any, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Next meeting. Looks like Wednesday, February 25th, 2026. Mm-hmm. That is a Wednesday, not a Thursday.
Correct.
Anything else? Do I have a motion to go into executive session to consider medical staff appointments, reappointments, and any legal concerns?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.